Taking a look at investing with a purpose now, how's your investment portfolio going? Or maybe you don't have one and are thinking about how to begin in that process. Shannon Wegner is our guest. He's been with us before, a certified financial planner with Wegner Asset Management of Madison. They provide independent private wealth management on a fee-only basis for individuals and families. And good to have him back. And certainly, if you have some investment questions, you are most welcome to join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Shannon, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back.
You mentioned that you and seem proud of the fact that you're a fee only basis with
right.
with your business. Why is that a good thing?
There's a difference out there. There's really three categories. There's fee only, fee based, and commission based. The commission based obviously has been around for years, and that's when somebody sells you a mutual fund or sells you insurance, they're earning a commission on it. Nothing wrong with that. It's just a form of compensation, but by being fee-only, it may, in my opinion, take out some of the bias of what you're selling because, in essence, you're not selling anything. The client is paying you a fee, and therefore you're putting them in what you consider to be the best investment or insurance that fits their situation.
Okay, so it can be a little more, what should we say, neutral? Is that
hopefully. That's the idea behind it. And fee only can also mean that you're charging hourly as well. Mm-hmm. It depends how it's set up. But, yeah, hopefully it takes some of the bias out of it. I think it does.
Well, already online is George in Madison, so let's just go to George. George, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks much. My question is about possibly buying a property and with that, consolidating some debt into the property. Is that possible? And just how do you go about that, I guess?
Mm-hmm. So you want to buy the property but consolidate other debt within that property? Is that what you're thinking?
Yes. I have some student loans that were through a private bank and then also some credit card debt. I'm wondering if you're able to roll all that into one payment with the property.
Possibly. I mean, you would need to have some equity within the property in order to roll over some of these other debts into that loan as well. If you're not putting any money down or putting 3% down on this property that you're buying, there's no equity there to roll over this other debt to. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. As far as, is there another, I guess, debt consolidation, anything that you can do to kind of get rid of those other small payments? Because what I have is like three small payments, but they add up to, you know, fairly large amount, and then I'm trying to buy a property to live in at the same time, and then things get tight. I'm just wondering if there's a way to make it a little more affordable.
Sure. Well, the student loans, I don't know if you've consolidated your student loans yet. That's always something that you can do. There's a number of different companies out there where you can consolidate different Stafford loans, all of them. You know, a lot of people have five, six different types of student loans. You can consolidate those into one, sometimes even get a better interest rate that way. And you do get some tax breaks with your student loan interest, so that's not necessarily a bad thing. Congress actually just voted to lower student loan rates, so that's not so bad. The credit card debt's always the big one because that's always usually at a higher rate, and anything you can do to get that lower is helpful. Sometimes you can even look for a credit card out there, if your credit's good, where they'll offer 0% balance for 6 months, 12 months, and you can do a balance transfer and at least have a lower interest rate for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. If you'd like to join in talking investing today with Shannon Wegner, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Shannon, you're from the Madison area, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Born and raised in Madison here.
And how'd you decide to specialize in asset management for a career?
Well, I think it started back when I was going to the University of Wisconsin right here in Madison. I actually started out in communications, wanted to be on the radio like you, and then happened to take an economics class and fell in love with the whole idea behind it. So stuck around a little bit longer, got the double major with that, and actually started trading commodity futures and options while in college, which was definitely a learning experience. Needless to say, I don't trade commodities anymore, but it did teach me a lot about the markets and how they work. And as they say, it was all downhill from there. I worked for a couple banks and brokerage firms here and out on the East Coast, and then came back to Madison and started my own practice at that point.
Before we go back to the phones, if a new client approaches you, how do you expect to help them?
The first thing that I always do before we even start talking about what investments they have or anything money related, just to sit down and try to get a game plan of what they're trying to do, where they're trying to go. Do they envision retiring at a certain age or buying a second home, or maybe they love their job and don't mind working, but they want to be able to travel? Before you can even talk about allocation or investments, you have to know what the person wants, because everybody's mm-hmm. different. And so I think that's the important thing. And then once you have an idea of those goals, then you can start looking at everything else.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's go to Carol in Wisconsin Rapids next. Carol, hi to you.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've recently been appointed power of attorney for my brother who lives in southern Wisconsin, actually in your area. He's 76. He has scattered assets and is fairly well, but he lives alone, does not own his home. And I'm trying to figure out the best way to pull all these assets together. He's currently spending more than what I can figure out his budget is. And I don't understand how to look at the spending down situation with possibility of a nursing home in the future or something like that. Are there publications I can find in Wisconsin to help me along that road?
There are publications put out by the state that kind of talk about, you know, long-term care and insurance and what the options are. What you have there is a tricky situation, and even for a financial planner like myself, that would take a while to sit down and go through everything that he has.
Yes, and I'm still trying to round things up. It's kind of like herding cats at the moment.
Absolutely, and that's not uncommon. I see that often for anybody that's any age of having things scattered all over the place. Especially with your distance, it may be in your best interest, and I'm not trying to be biased here, but it may be in your best interest to sit down with a planner that can help you do that, because how much you withdraw from his nest egg, and I don't know how much of a nest egg he has, it is important. And if he's pulling out more than might be sustainable in the long term, mm-hmm. now all of a sudden 10 years from now, 15 years from now, what's going to happen at that point?
Exactly. That's my issue, and I've never been trained to do anything like this, so I'm very concerned that I'm going to make the wrong move. But on the other hand, I don't want to hesitate too much and, for instance, chew up all of his assets in, like, insurance premiums or something. For life insurance, he won't need.
Right.
He has no dependents and no children. He's alone. So he does have a financial advisor who has part of his money, but I'm still herding up the rest of his assets, and they obviously aren't going to last 20 more years, for instance.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think if you have the power of attorney and you're obviously an integral part of his life at this point, I think it would be important for you to sit down with his financial planner as well and work together and make sure that you're comfortable and happy with how that relationship is going, because it looks like you're going to be the one that's in charge of it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. And the publications from the state, where would I get my hands on those?
Oh, the University of Wisconsin Extension, I know, has some publications on durable power of attorney.
I know the state puts out something for long-term care insurance. You might even be able to type it into Google, mm-hmm. State of Wisconsin Long-Term Care, and they do have a publication out there.
Good, I'll do that.
One of the other things that Shannon might not say, but I would say, or maybe he'd say it too, if you sit down with a financial planner that you already have for part of it, and you're not comfortable with him, there's nothing wrong with him or her. There's nothing wrong with seeking out a second opinion from somebody else.
Definitely.
And I think, if you kind of go by your feelings there, but if you're not real comfortable, it does not hurt to check around a little bit.
Yeah, Definitely. Well, thank you so much for your help. You've given me some good pointers.
Yeah, thanks, Carol, for calling. Joya in Fitchburg, it's your turn now. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for having him, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you the two things, the phone number and the address where your office is located?
Sure.
And second is, I have a little complicated question. For a senior citizen, is it a good idea, you know, with a reasonable good amount of asset to convert the traditional IRA to Roth IRA now and to get done with the taxes?
It depends. Taking your second question first, it depends how large that IRA is and what the reasoning behind it is. There's some reasons to do that for estate tax purposes because you're, in essence, when you cash out your IRA, you're paying all the taxes on the IRA immediately and then putting it into a Roth. So you've taken that chunk of taxes out of your estate and now everything is in the Roth that grows tax-free. Your kids can inherit it tax-free as well, at least when they pull out the money, I mean tax-free. So there are estate reasons for doing it. From a taxability reason, though, income tax-wise, you really would have to analyze that situation. It'd be too hard for me to give just a blanket answer on that without knowing how much, what kind of tax bracket you're in, how that might fluctuate over the years.
Mm-hmm. And you're how do people contact you, Shannon?
The best way would be through my website, which is Wegner Asset Management, and Wegner is spelled with an E, so it's W-E-G-N-E-R, Asset Management. But she also asked my address. I'm on University Avenue, 3330 University Avenue, Suite 120 here in Madison.
Okay.
And
so,
what's the phone number, please?
Sure. I have an 800 number. It's 888-298-9711, and that would work for anybody in the state, obviously.
888-298, what was it again?
9711.
9711. Okay. All right. Thanks,
Dad. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Shannon Wegner, our guest, certified financial planner with Wegner Asset Management of Madison. Pleased to have him along and certainly glad to have you listening in. If you've got a question in this area, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Shannon Wegner is our guest now, a certified financial planner with Wegner Asset Management of Madison, and he's here to try and help demystify a little bit of the investing process and answer your questions. And certainly pleased to have him here and happy to have you listening in. Every line's filled right now, so we'll go right to the phones. And Larcy in La Crosse, you are next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I work for a student loan company, Student Capital, a national student loan company, and just wanted to clarify the question about consolidating student loans.
Sure.
When borrowers are looking at consolidating, they want to be real careful about consolidating their federal loans with their private loans.
Mm.
What happens when they take their federal loans and combine those with their private loans? Their federal loans are no longer federal loans. They turn into private loans, which means they have none of the wonderful little, they can't deduct the taxes and they don't have the deferments and forbearances. So they really need to be careful. Usually we recommend that they keep their private education loans separate from their federal loans. They can still consolidate those through some companies.
Mm-hmm.
But again, once they consolidate, they're making smaller payments per month on those loans, which means they pay more interest to the companies in the long run, which is good for us, but
yeah,
something we need to keep in mind.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a good suggestion. It kind of is similar to when somebody refinances their house, too. You can refinance at a lower rate, but if you do it at another 30-year term, all you're doing is extending out that much farther. And yes, you're paying less, but you've just extended for a whole another 30 years. So if you live there for 10, refinance for another 30-year mortgage, now you've turned it into a 40-year mortgage. So a lot of times when you refinance, it's best if you get a lower rate, keep the payments. I mean, I know a lot of people try to lower their payments, but if you can keep them the same, you're going to get it paid off that much quicker because now you have a lower rate and you're still paying what you were before. You'll get it paid off that much sooner.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much, Larcy. And Tim in Rusk County, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
If you're familiar with the use of U.S. savings bonds for payment of education costs, can you advise, is it carte blanche no matter when you bought the bond, if they're tax-free, or is there a time period that you had to buy them before or after?
So if you take out savings bonds and use them for education purposes, you're saying they're tax-free.
I've been advised by a financial planner that they were tax-free. Then checking into that, it appeared that at one point in time, and maybe it's still true, that only the bonds bought after a certain year can be used tax-free for education purposes. Are you familiar with that?
Okay.
Only a little bit, only enough to be dangerous. I'd have to look into it, but I know that there are some I-bonds out there and various other kinds of bonds that you can do for education, like you're saying, and I would not be surprised if you did have to hold them for a certain amount of time before you could use them, but without looking into it, I really couldn't give you a definitive answer on that.
I suppose you could go online to, if they're savings bonds, they're U.S. government bonds, there would have to be something.
Definitely. There's really good education out there on those types of bonds, and I'd be happy to if you wanted to shoot me an email through my website and I could look it up for you as well. But yes, you can go to a number of different websites. Just type it in. Again, Google's a wonderful thing. Type it into a search engine and that might even lead you to the appropriate websites to look that up.
And your website address, and I'm sure you have your email address on that, is WegnerAssetManagement.com.
Right, and Wegner again is WEGNER, and there is a little contact us, a spot on there that, so if anybody can't get through today or wants a follow-up on a question, feel free to contact me and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
All right.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Chuck in Oshkosh, it's your turn now. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I was wondering, when does it make sense to move your investments from one, broker to another? I've got, say, with Wells Fargo, I've got a bunch of money there, and then I got some with, say, A.G. Edwards or something, and mutual funds, and one of them says to me, you know, you should move everything over to us and have it all under one, you know, one entity, and then I say, how much is that going to cost me? It's going to cost, you know, 3.5%, so if you move, say, $100,000, that's $3,500, you know. When is it worth doing that, or is it worth doing that? Mm-hmm. And especially if both of them are doing, you know, about the same, making about the same money each year, why would I want to do that?
Right, and that's the question you have to ask, is why do you want to do that? I'm a strong believer in keeping life simple, and by consolidating as much as you can under one roof, it just makes it easier. You get one statement. It's easier to keep track of all your investments. But that in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean to do it, especially if there's, which it sounds like you're talking about, some sort of a back-end load or surrender penalty to do that. Then you really have to look at it. Would that make sense? If you're paying a couple $1,000s, say 3% on a $100,000 portfolio, you may want to wait unless those investments are really underperforming the alternative. Now, consolidating in and of itself doesn't mean you necessarily have to sell everything that you have. You can move assets in kind to a number of custodians, from Fidelity to Schwab to many others, and that doesn't mean you have to sell necessarily your Wells Fargo funds or your A.G. Edward funds. Again, it depends what they're in. If you are talking mutual funds, a lot of those custodians can hold those things, and then you can hold it until the surrender penalty is over. It just depends. But also consolidating sometimes helps with some of these brokerage companies, in that the larger account you have, sometimes you get better pricing if you're trading stocks or exchange-traded mm-hmm. funds. So that can sometimes help, or lower your annual fee if they have an annual fee.
I see. So you just got to determine what all the costs and all the advantages of.
Right. Why are you even considering it? Is it to make it simple? Is it to?
I'm not. I mean, I guess he's.
Well, he's trying to talk you into it.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's. I mean, two versus one. I guess one would be simpler, but two is not that, you know, not that complicated either. You know.
Well, and be careful that the reason that they want you to do that isn't so that they can movie out of one thing, so now you're paying possibly a surrender fee or back-end load. And then, hey, we're going to put you in this other thing that you're going to pay an upfront load on. So now you've lost 3% on the back end. You might be paying 5% on the front end of the next thing. That you want to be careful of, especially if it's, again, going back to the fee-only versus commission-based. If you're working with any type of commission-based entity, that's something to keep in mind. What's their reasoning behind it?
Yeah. Something to think about, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Joan in Pewaukee, it's your turn next. Hi, Joan.
Hi. My question is about IRAs. I needed some money to pay off some charge accounts. I had charged my property taxes and some medical bills, and I had $17,000 that I cashed in. And I just had a question whether if I use the money to pay off the charge accounts, whether I can still roll over an equivalent amount within 6 months into another fund.
So you took some money out of your IRA and you're wondering if you can put money back into the
right.
IRA?
Mm-hmm.
You usually only get 60 days for that, not 6 months for that.
Okay.
And what you could do is if you're eligible to still contribute to an IRA, if you have earned income, you could at least put money into the IRA as your annual contribution. It's not going to equal the $17,000, but at least you could do that. And if you do it before April 15th of this year, you can put in money from last year's contribution because you have until April 15th and this year's contribution right away. So how old are you, may I ask?
I'm 64. I'll be 65 in May.
Okay.
And what my question was is if I earned more this year than next year, maybe I shouldn't have done it in December, but I pulled it out in December because I had a lot of medical bills and the property tax, and I thought maybe it would wash out some of the income tax I'd have to pay.
Hmm.
But I wasn't sure because my earnings are about $20,000. And then I also was getting Social Security because I'm a widow, which I'll have to pay some back because I earned over $12,300.
Sure.
And so I'm just not sure what my earnings will amount to as far as paying the tax on the $17,000.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're not paying any penalty, obviously, because once you're over the age of 59 and a half, you can take out of an IRA, but you will owe the income tax on it. Again, at this point, you could lower your income, but it would be, you could put money into the IRA for last year's contribution, which you would be able to do $5,000 for because it's $4,000 plus an extra $1,000 as a catch-up provision. So that's $5,000 that you could put back in the IRA and get a deduction for. That might be one possibility, but again, it's not going to help you with the whole $17,000.
And I suppose, depending on the significance of the medical bills, if you're itemizing your income taxes and you've got significant medical, you should be able to itemize that, too.
Right.
Yeah, I guess where my question comes up is whether the IRA can make more than the interest I'd be paying on the charge.
Yeah.
It depends. If you're talking credit cards, usually those are pretty high interest rates, and that would be a tough one to keep up with it, with the investments. But It depends what you're paying.
Yeah, it depends a lot. And what your IRA is earning, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah. Good luck, Joan. Thanks. Diana in East Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi.
Yes, thanks so much for having this program. I think there's so many questions for those of us who are going to try to enjoy retirement and spend some of that money we've been putting aside. My question is, how do you determine how to choose a financial planner? I recently hired a CPA because every time I talk to anybody about investments, they always say, well, check with your tax person. And if you've primarily done your own because of bad experiences with brokers that earn either less than the cost of living or sell you a whole package of just whatever they're getting commission on, it leads you to be a little distrustful of having someone else make decisions.
Yeah.
So if you want to choose a financial planner, how do you go about I was surprised I couldn't even find any good marketing on some of the people.
Sure. There's three things that I would look for, and I think they're important. One is if you're going to work for a financial planner, they should be a CFP, which is a certified financial professional. That just, to me, makes sense. If you're going to have an accountant, you get one that's a CPA. Financial planner, you want someone that's a CFP. The next thing goes back to what Larry and I were talking about earlier, which is a fee-only planner versus a fee-based or commission-based planner. In my mind, a fee-only planner removes a lot of the bias and selling pressure that's in the marketplace that a lot of people experience, because a fee-only planner has to disclose all of their fees directly to you so you know exactly what they're getting paid and how they're getting paid. So if somebody comes to me, they know that the mutual fund is going to be charging this much and I'm going to be making this much. It's all spelled out. There's no hidden fees anywhere with that. And then the other part of it that's a little bit more complicated is a fiduciary planner versus a non-fiduciary planner. As an independent registered investment advisor, which is what you can ask somebody if they are, independent registered investment advisor, that advisor has a fiduciary duty to put your best interest first and to disclose all conflicts of interest. A brokerage firm or a banking firm doesn't have that same requirement. They have a suitability requirement. So if there's five investments out there and all five of those are suitable for your situation, they can tell you to or sell you any one of those five. An independent registered investment advisor who has a fiduciary duty has to look at those five and pick the one that's in your best interest. So there is a difference. It's subtle, but it's there. And I think those are the three things. You want someone who's a CFP, an independent registered investment advisor that has a fiduciary duty, and one that charges fee only. And those are the questions you should ask when you're looking for somebody.
Oh, that sounds really helpful, really helpful. And my just closing quick question is, if you can talk about the pros and cons of taking Social Security early when one of the spouses really worked full-time and the other did not, knowing that men usually live longer.
Or women usually live longer.
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And so which one would be drawing it early, the husband?
They would be drawing Social Security. So if they take it early, are there any disadvantages for long-term?
The main disadvantage is, would that person still be earning an income when they take it early? Because if you're earning an income above a certain level, you actually begin to lose some of those benefits that you would be taking. So that's the first thing to look at. Second is the longevity issue. You really want to look at family health in that situation because everybody's different, and sometimes somebody might have a little bit of insight to that. So it's not, there's no blanket answer to it without kind of looking at some of those variables. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure does. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. I want to go back to the woman who called earlier and was caring for her brother. I had a durable power of attorney, and we've gotten a call from someone who said, reminded us that the state bar has information for that person and for anybody else in that situation. And the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups has some advice as well. And their number is 608-224-0606, 608-224-0606. And I think if you went again to a search engine and typed in Wisconsin, the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups, you'd quickly find information. So I wanted to bring that up. Betty and Delavan, it is your turn next. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about income limits and retirement saving options. My husband and I earn over $150,000 and are struggling trying to find retirement saving options because I think we exceed the maximum for the IRAs.
It depends on the IRA. Do either of you participate in a 401k or any other?
Yes, we max out our 401ks.
Okay. So then, right, then unfortunately you do have a problem with doing regular IRAs. The Roth IRAs, you're close to. The phase out used to be between 150 and 160. I think for 2007, I'd have to look at my notes, but I believe it's like 156 to 166, right around there, plus or minus a couple thousand.
Yeah.
So you're right on the edge there to being able to contribute to a Roth. Yes, go on.
Ahead.
I was just going to say the other option is even though everyone tries to avoid it, after-tax savings isn't the end of the world in a lot of ways. Dividends are only taxed at 15%. Long-term capital gains is at 15%. So even if you've maxed out some of these other options, even saving after tax isn't the end of the world and shouldn't be looked down upon or not done just because of the tax issues.
So saving after tax into a regular mutual fund or something like that is that the vehicle that you recommend then?
Absolutely. Okay. And especially with an index type of fund in an after-tax account is going to have minimal taxes as you're accumulating it. And then when you sell, if you hold it for over a year, you're looking at 15%, as long as Congress doesn't change the rules on us, which I can't promise that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Betty. Thanks for calling. Kevin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I'm 47. I have a wife and two young children. And we have a fair amount of assets, but not a lot of them real liquid and not a lot of cash. I'm being advised to start purchasing long-term care insurance, and I'm just wondering what are some of the main things you need to consider in going that route or not going that route.
Right. I guess just from what I've gotten from you so far, a bigger concern to me would be having more liquid assets, such as an emergency fund or a rainy day fund, if you want to call it that. Especially with two young kids, in case you lose your job or anything, that's looking at more of the short-term issues at hand. That, to me, would be more important than long-term care insurance at this point. One of the biggest problems with long-term care, it's a great idea and concept, but the industry still isn't there as far as pricing adequately. And what happens is a lot of people are sold long-term care insurance, like yourself, at age 47 or in their early 50s. And then what happens is as you age and get older to the point where you might actually need this long-term care insurance, the insurance companies realize they price this too inexpensively, and in order to recoup what they're paying out in claims, they keep raising and raising the premiums to the point where all of a sudden when you're 75 years old, you can't afford the premiums anymore, and here you've been paying it for 20 years, and you have to get rid of it just at the time you might need it. So I'm not saying don't do long-term care insurance. I don't want to get the calls that are going to yell at me for that. It's just there might be more important things for you to worry about at this point. You're still very young, and I don't know that unless you've got, again, family health issues, I don't know that this would be the time to be looking at long-term care insurance.
It seems I'm not sure it's affordable for me, but just thinking about the prospect of having an accident and having everything taken away from me and my family due to, you know, long-term care needs is a little scary.
It is. Are you comfortable with your retirement nest egg at this point?
No.
Then that, to me, would be a heck of a lot more important.
Or college funds, either.
Exactly. And college funding I'd put even behind all of those because right now, your primary concern should be retirement. That's great if you've got a wonderful long-term care insurance, but you can't afford to eat. I mean, that's not going to do you any good come retirement. So retirement planning should be your number one, and then you can start looking at long-term care and college planning. But don't even put college planning in front of your retirement. You know, the kids will be able to get jobs and keep working. You may not be able to in retirement.
Well, just lastly, I mean, what's the benchmark or what's the sort of the guideline? I mean, where should a person be at in terms of retirement savings?
At your age or?
Yeah.
Again, without knowing what you're spending and what you anticipate spending, will you have the house paid off when you retire? All those things you have to put in there. There are some financial calculators out there you could look at online. But I'd have to know those things in order to give you a blanket answer.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, you really have to know each individual situation, I guess.
It's true.
Shannon, if you're going to make an informed decision on that. But you do kind of have to take care of yourself a little bit.
I see so much written about education, college savings, and how important that is, and I sometimes think people are putting the horse in front of the cart. The retirement planning is crucial.
And with that, we need to conclude. Shannon, thank you very much for calling, for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. It's been great to be here again.
And again, if you want to go online to Shannon's website, it's Wegner, W-E-G-N-E-R, assetmanagement.com. And he has an 800 number, 888-298-9711, if you want to talk some more with him or if you have a question. We have a lot of people online didn't get to you, so feel free. He's ready and willing to help out. Thank you very much, Shannon.
Thank you, Larry.
Tomorrow we'll talk garden talk. Shelley Ryan from the Wisconsin Gardener, our guest. Stay with us. Lots in store.